What have the animals done for us? My name is Olga, and I've been wondering about that question for a really long time. And the Other 5 Billion podcast is my way of answering it and sharing with you what I found out along the way. Well, just last week, I was over in the UK in a very little pretty town called Bath. And like many of the people who stopped by just for the day, I didn't have time to sightsee. There were far more important things for me to do. I was very lucky to interview Simon Stewart, who's someone that is a global authority in species conservation. These days, Simon is a director of strategic conservation at an organisation called Synchronicity Earth, which is really quite an innovative organisation. And you can find out just why at their website at synchronicityearth.org. Simon is also very, very much involved in the IUCN, which is probably one of the biggest organisations out there that you may not have yet heard of. IUCN stands for the International Union for Conservation of Nature. It's been around since 1948 and has 1,300 members, which include governments, NGOs, indigenous peoples' organisations, scientific institutions, and business associations. It also has 13,000 experts who provide input, and more detail of that in the full episode, and that input turns into information, research programmes, and sets the agenda for congresses that take place every 4 years. Now, at these IUCN congresses, there's a members' assembly, and it's here that decisions are made by the members that actually make a huge difference to conservation and sustainability globally. So if we know more about this organisation, we of course know a lot more about the future of animals and plants in the world. And that, for us, at this podcast, where we want to talk all about the animal species, is obviously very central. Now, why was it especially interesting to have spoken with Simon last week? Well, Simon was the chair of what's called the Species Survival Commission for 8 years. And he himself says in his biography that he had, in many senses, the job of leading species conservation globally. And what a fascinating interview it turned out to be. We spoke about the difference between what we see in the media when it comes to conservation and really what the messages could be if they were more accurate.
Very few people would understand that actually conservation has had a very big impact. What measures we've had suggest that the impact of conservation has been very great. It hasn't been enough. And the reason why we see all these declining trends on the Red List Index or the Living Planet Index isn't because conservation doesn't work, it's because we don't do enough conservation. So that message, I bet, isn't out there. And then there are some threats for which we don't yet have solutions. And that those are the ones that worry me the most.
Of course, we spoke about some of those threats that concern Simon.
Threats coming from the need to feed the world. So we have a growing human population, but we have a much more rapidly growing economy with people expecting and deserving to be fed properly. So part of that we can obviously deal with through food waste, but not all of it through food waste. So we have to find ways to feed the world that are not going to destroy the world's natural habitats or fragment them too much. And that's a huge issue that we also have to come up with probably some technological fixes on, which is controversial.
And there's one that's particularly worrying to him at the moment, and I guess doesn't really make it onto many dinner party discussions. And that was the corals. What happens if we lose them, like we really could in the next 100 years?
If we lose corals, I'm not a top expert, but we lose several things. We lose the most diverse habitat in the oceans for species, so probably coral-dependent species will be in huge trouble. They'll probably be variable in terms of their extent to adapt to something else, but it'll still be a massive loss of diversity. We'll lose critically important coastline defences in areas of tropical storms, really important for coastal communities in the tropics. We'll lose a lot of fisheries, so economic livelihoods of local people. We'll change ocean chemistry with acidification. Goodness knows what the consequences of that are, so it's big.
Yeah, that's dire. That's really dire.
It's dire. Yeah, that's a big one. That's why it is a major focus. Mm-hmm. So just within the current climate scenarios, my understanding is it'll take out all corals easily within the next century, unless we do something proactive. So it's not just enough to mitigate, reduce our carbon emissions, to plant more forests and all of that. You have to do all of that. But the level of change that brings to ocean chemistry won't be fast enough. We're going to have to do something. It won't be fast enough for corals. Therefore, we're going to have to do something more proactive, such as locally managing pH, locally managing temperature, locally... I don't know, who knows? People are talking some crazy ideas, which we might have to go... genetically modifying corals, genetically modifying the algae in the corals. Who knows? I'm not advocating any of that. But the costs of going wrong are so huge that we can't say, no, we refuse to look at it. We have to research options.
We also spoke about some reasons why there's probably not enough time or money actually dedicated to conservation, as probably there should be.
In our busy and frenetic lives, most of us can't know most of what's going on. So I find it very easy to understand why a hedge fund manager in London won't know about the biodiversity crisis. Mm. In the end, these people, when they get wealthy, they have to decide whether or not they'll go into philanthropy. If they do, they then have to decide which of the many causes in the world they want to support. Only a very small minority, I think it's 4%, of philanthropy goes to environment. Even then, an awful lot of that is environment at home. So international biodiversity funding gets very little. And that's what we in Synchronicity Earth try to build just a little bit of the gap on.
But of course, it's all a lot more complicated than just that.
Money is a really big part of it. That's what we work on in Synchronicity Earth, is to try and get new money, in our case from the finance sector and from high net worth individuals who haven't previously funded in conservation. But it is by no means the only thing we have to overcome. We need new money, we need new organisations, we need new experts, we need a new army of people, we need new policies and standards that governments and the corporate sector are going to adhere. We need a political climate that is not denying the problem, which we are seeing in some places. We need a belief that conservation is a cross-societal problem. It's not a liberal thing or a conservative thing. It's a thing for all of us. It's not for one part of the political spectrum.
Simon also opened my eyes to the fact that the conservation movement is not really too dissimilar to other movements that have brought really big changes in recent years.
Part of the problem is that animals and plants don't have a voice on their own. And so we are their voice, and so we are their feeble advocates. We can never be quite as good a voice as they could be themselves, of course. Mm. Whereas the world's poor, in a sense, are their own voice. And that brings a massive authenticity that we can never quite bring ourselves as a conservation movement. So it's all right. So I think there's a challenge there that we have to somehow overcome.
So join us next week when this episode of the Other 5 Billion podcast is going to be published on the 11th of October. There will be some really hard truths, but there's also going to be a lot of hope. And for now, I'll just leave you with the words that probably hit me the hardest during that interview with Simon.
In reality, human impact on the globe is so massive that every species we know that's near to extinction is down to us. There isn't any out there that we can say what's natural that I have seen. And I have seen thousands and thousands of red list assessments, and I've seen not one that we can say, oh, we're innocent, we have nothing to do with that one. Haven't seen a single one.
So until next week, and see you soon.